Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, where we strive to be open-minded and open-hearted. You are welcome here no matter where you are on your spiritual journey, your life journey, no matter your sexual orientation, your gender preference, your ethnicity, whether you are a Christian, an atheist, or somewhere in between, you are welcome here. We try to have, we do have quite different services on different Sunday mornings. So if this is one of your first times here, please join us again. Sometimes the services are led by me, Sandy Ingham, Prairie's part-time minister, sometimes by leaders from people from within the congregation, and sometimes by people outside of this congregation. Okay, these then are the opening words. Titled Ascension by Marty Keller. Despite brown edges, we can count on dogwood, count on the azaleas, on irises and morning glories. They are our resurrection, rising to meet the season, no matter how muddy or disconsolate. We can depend on their ascension, a private Easter poking through the clay soil. Count on what's been planted to merit praise and glory. Alleluia, each bloom and tendril. We light our chalice to remember the sorrow, the loss, and the joy that are within this season of the year. The Passover that brought freedom from slavery and bondage for the Jewish people continues to bring light into the world. Palm Sunday, Good Friday, and Easter that brought joy and the triumph of life over death for the Christian people still bring the light of that joy to the world. The spring equinox that brings new life bursting forth on the land each year brings lengthened days of sunlight to all earth. Passover for freedom, Easter for life, spring for rebirth. We light our chalice for all three. The first reading that I want to share with you is one I've shared with you before, but it's so appropriate, and I don't think you'll mind hearing it again, assuming you even remember. Blessing the Blend from Jane Zepka. She writes, the sentence, may we bring ourselves and our stories to church this morning and consider the blend a blessing, appeared twice in our Palm Sunday service yesterday. I always believe, Zepka writes, what I say on Sunday morning, but I said this prayerful sentence in particular earnest, having lived through 34 or so Easter and Passover seasons in Unitarian Universalist churches. Every year I fight the feeling that our UU churches just can't win on Easter. Our familiar congregation will come through the doors alongside a number of Easter visitors we've never seen before. Why do they come? To hear traditional Easter music. To not hear familiar traditional Easter music. To be reminded of the newness of spring, the pagan symbols of the season, and the lengthening days without a lot of talk about Jesus and resurrection. To be reminded of Jesus and the resurrection without a lot of talk about the newness of spring, the pagan symbols of the season, and the lengthening days. To participate in a family service where children delight in discovering the many roots of our religious tradition. To participate in a dignified service where adults celebrate the undeniably Christian holiday, Easter. Zepka concludes, we each have religious stories, spring dreams, seasonal celebrations, and on Easter, they're with us, joining together here. It is our glorious celebration, and by considering the blend a blessing, we win every time. And this from another Unitarian Universalist minister, this time Kathleen McTeague, titled Easter Resurrection. The Easter story, as told in the Gospel of John, revolves around the experience of one person, Mary Magdalene. It's Mary who gets up before dawn on the day after the Jewish Sabbath and goes alone to visit the tomb. Her beloved teacher has died a horrible death, and it was only by the unexpected generosity of a wealthy man that Jesus was given even the small, late dignity of a real burial place instead of a pauper's grave. Because of the Sabbath, his body had not been cleaned according to tradition, and Mary set out early with her herbs in order to do this last grieving service. But when she got to the tomb, she found that the stone blocking its entrance had already been rolled away, and his body was gone. It isn't hard to imagine her despair and her anger at being robbed of even this last farewell. She ran to some of Jesus's other followers with the news, and they came back with her to see for themselves. They probably stood for a while arguing about what to do, but there was nothing to be done. Now, these are my words now. Remember, I mean, this is a fascinating time in history. These associates, these friends, these students of Jesus were criminals. They weren't supposed to have been associating with this man called Jesus. So what could these people do? Who would you complain to when you risked your life, even admitting to the authorities that you had known him? Filled with that bitter realization, they finally left again. But Mary stayed, alone and weeping. Maybe something defiant crept in with her grief that made her brave enough to stay. And then she caught a movement out of the corner of her eye, and she turned to find someone standing there. Why are you crying? He asked. Who are you looking for? Well, thinking that he might be the gardener, she said as carefully as she could, because remember, she could be arrested. Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've put him, and I'll take care of it. I won't tell anyone. I'll just take his body and I'll clean him up so he can rest in peace. Then Jesus, because of course it was Jesus standing there, according to the old stories, and Mary hadn't recognized him, Jesus just called out her name, Mary. And then she knew. And she said back to him, Rabbi, for those of us who believe that Jesus was a human being like us, the idea of his literal resurrection from death is a leap of faith we can't quite make. We know that when our bodies die, they die. That we belong to the earth, and it is comforting and right to know that we dissolve again into that sweetness. But we can believe in Mary's resurrection. Mary's resurrection. When Mary heard her name called, suddenly her eyes were opened to a new reality. She was called out from the blindness of her grief and her despair, and from within herself, she found a new way to see and to understand what had happened to her. I take that Easter story as truth, writes McTeague. It points to the moments in every life when something within us is called out, called forth, called to a deeper understanding of our world. Easter raises the question, in this bright opening of the earth, in this turning season, when new life is pouring out all around us, What will we bring forth from within ourselves? It's a time that calls us to open our eyes in a new way, to see not just what we expect to see, but perhaps some bright and mysterious truth we could not fathom before, something completely new and unexpected. McTeague concludes, "We are a troubled tribe, we human beings. The unfolding story of our time on Earth is clouded with pain and cruelty, with missed opportunities, unthinkable heedlessness, and indifference. It is also marked by the bright notes of decency, kindness, freedom, and courage. Easter proclaims that we each have a part to play in how the story unfolds if we are all willing to wake up. We listen for what is calling to us. And like Mary, when we hear our name, we answer, rising anew to meet the life that will not stop calling our names." The Easter story means something to me. It has value, even though it has been many years since I left the world of Christianity. I clearly remember Easter sunrise services as a child, and they were at sunrise. And they happened no matter what the weather was. You think it was cold this morning, even though I grew up in Pennsylvania, where it's not as cold usually as here. It was those cold and rainy ones that were difficult. And these sunrise services were always, always held outside. Clear through my teens, into high school, into the first couple of years of college, I went to those Presbyterian sunrise services. The beginning of the end for me was probably that Old Testament class I had to take at Teal College in Northwest Pennsylvania from an old, wonderful, wonderful professor who was a good Lutheran, but boy, did he plant questions in our minds. Sunrise services, no matter what the weather, and there we were, and I saw them this morning at sunrise. I had, I guess, maybe a mystical moment. I saw Peg, my grandmother, who did not want to be called grandma, not old enough, granddad, Barb, Aunt Barb, before I knew their flaws, before I knew that Aunt Barb was an alcoholic and abused her children, before I knew all that, I saw them this morning. Of course, my mother and my dad. I didn't see my siblings in that moment this morning, not yet, because they're 8 and 10 years younger than I am. So this was before they were coming also to Easter sunrise services. And there we were, all of us in our Easter finery, our hats, although I don't remember wearing a hat myself. A seed was planted, though, even then, in those Christian services, a seed that I did not realize on a conscious level, nor at that point in my mind would I've, or in my life, would I have used the word humanist, capital H or not, let alone the words Unitarian and Universalist. But my life has been all the richer because I now understand that while I may have once been a Christian, and I cannot help but retain elements of Christianity in my daily living, and while I no longer want to throw out the baby with the bathwater when thinking about Christian history, all that is true, but my life is richer because I am a humanist now. I have always, I think, deep down been a humanist. Oh, I have criticisms about humanism. For example, this emphasis on head and the neglect of heart. We joke about Unitarians being all about the head, the intellect, reason, and the Universalists being all about the heart, feelings, emotions. For those of you who don't know a lot about Unitarian Universalist history, you've probably gathered that they were two separate denominations and they merged in 1961. Now, those are all oversimplifications, of course, the heart and head thing. But sweeping generalizations usually have an element of truth in them. I want my religion, my faith, to have both heart and head. I want Sunday morning services to speak to your brains as well as to your feelings. I want you to laugh. I want you to cry, or at least get teary-eyed. And I want you, no matter where you are on that belief spectrum, to realize that we can be reasonable, rational, free-thinking people and at the same time be passionate, exuberant, whimsical, sorrowful, at times a little crazy acting people. In other words, I want us to be whole person humanists. For this particular fundamentalist humanist now realizes that being a fundamentalist humanist does not preclude my being spiritual, does not mean that I do not believe in mystery, wonder, awe. And it does not mean that I cannot have a mystical experience or two along the way. As I wrote in the Prairie April Fire newsletter, that probably places me more in the religious humanist category than the secular humanist one. And I'm fine with that categorization, as long as you understand that I'm not using any conventional definition of religion here. Religion, to me, is that which ultimately concerns us. It's the ground of all being. For me, religion is life calling us, in the words of UU Minister Sarah Moores Campbell, to awaken to the possibilities within us and among us. Possibilities for new life in ourselves and in our world. Religion, for me, is a necessary part of life when religion means a way of living that is balanced, compassionate, loving, and forgiving. As William Murray reminds us, the Unitarian Universalist Humanist Association identifies reason, compassion, and community as the essence of religious humanism. This religion of humanity is one that I happily embrace. And isn't that what Easter is all about? Life calling us once again to wake up, to be aware, to have hope, to love. Isn't that what Jesus gave his life for? For community? We always have to remember, at Easter time in particular, that Jesus was killed because of the company he kept, because of the persons he invited to his open table fellowship. And because he was anti-war. Think about that. He was a scary dude, as we might say today, who practiced what he preached, which made those in power very afraid. John Shelby Spong, some of you will know that name, a well-known theologian who I think has admitted quietly that he's a closet Unitarian Universalist, but he's Episcopal, I think, yeah. In his book, Jesus for the Non-Religious, talks about eternal truths. And among other things, he's saying that traditional Christians have made and are making, in his opinion, the fatal error of identifying the truth of the Jesus experience with the literalness of their explanations of that experience. And that never works. According to Spong, every explanation dies when its time comes. The death of the explanation does not mean the death of the experience. Some of you may have heard of Theodore Parker. He's a famous Unitarian minister in the mid-1800s, and he preached a sermon called The Transient and Permanent. And in it, he essentially said what Spong is referring to. Parker was saying that there are eternal truths, and it didn't really matter whether there had ever been someone named Jesus or not, because what Jesus stood for and tried to live his life by were things like love and compassion and complete humanity. It didn't have to be someone named Jesus, because those are eternal truths, and they would have appeared in someone else. They have appeared in many other people. For this, preaching that in 1841, even though Parker was a Unitarian, he came pretty close to being excommunicated, which we don't actually even do. But he took a lot of heat for that sermon. What is missing, I think, in the ongoing, forever ongoing cultural wars in this country is that there is room in humanity for both the secular and the religious. It doesn't have to be either or. It doesn't have to be both and. Not so long ago, in the New York Times wedding pages, which yes, I do read, I skim them. I always want to see if a UU minister is still has done a wedding. Plus the style section of the New York Times, you've heard me say this before, is where most of the news is, I think, the important news. So there's this story on January 28th about a couple who had, quote, a shared frustration with the secular life. They wanted to have a big wedding. So they were wrestling with how they were going to combine this, you know, secular stuff and what they wanted in a wedding. I share that frustration. I am troubled by the secularization of Western culture. This is what I overheard in a coffee shop a week ago, the day before Palm Sunday. A mother and a daughter, pretty sure they were a mother and a daughter, you know, they're just sitting there, right, practically beside me, and they both were on their, everybody's always on their phone, except me, I have a dumb phone. And so the daughter said to the mother, I'm not real sure, but I think I have to work on Easter this year. Is it on a Saturday or a Sunday? I laughed too, at first. And then later, it made me sad. I thought, how can you not know this? As my son said, well, at least she didn't ask what day Palm Sunday was on, or Good Friday. But there's something's missing if we lose that cultural identity. Tipping too far towards either end of the spectrum, secularism or religion, is dangerous for individuals and for countries. A void has been created, I think. And nothing meaningful has arisen, unless you're on the fundamentalist end of religion, to fill the void that secularization has created. I mean, then what do you get in that void? A madman for a president? Continuing environmental degradation? You know the litany. Where are we going? So we try to make a blend in here. As Zepka said, by considering the blend a blessing, maybe we'll win every time. Now I want to move us a little out of gloom and doom territory and into Easter and spring country. I struggle, as I think some of you at least do, mightily with winter. This year was worse than ever, or so it seemed. I probably say that every year. But from January through March, I crawled deeper and deeper into the tomb of my soul, trying to wrap myself in the security of darkness in my attempt to take refuge from the world and its heaviness. I have been in that tomb of the soul for way too long, weeks and months, too long, and it's not a place where I want to be. I yearn for balance. I crave peace, serenity, acceptance. I need to be reminded of the possibilities of life during these darkest of times, seasonally, politically, personally. I need to be reminded of what can bring me out of that tomb and resurrect for me the possibilities of life. Well, I think I'm coming out of the tomb now. Probably been a culmination of things. For example, on March 28th, which happened to be the date of my mother's death, many years ago, I was, as I am every single year, stunned by the snowdrops. There they were. Some of you, like Bart Park, who's right there, assure me that this will happen every year, and I never believe you, Bart. But I live between two parks, and there is that clump that's there every spring, but I never remember. And then yesterday, I was stunned again by those Barb, help me out. Purpley ones. Cilia. No, not yet. Not yet, although I did see a few. I saw a few of those, but the cilia. Whew. And then, of course, books help me, unless I'm really deep into that tomb of the soul. One particular book seems to be trying to save me. Humanist Voices in Unitarian Universalism, edited by Kendall Gibbons and William Murray. There's a whole series of these. They're not all published yet, but there's a Pagan Voices in Unitarian Universalism one. I highly recommend them. Humanism requires, I think, just as big a leap of faith as Christianity does. Michael Warner, one of the editors, or one of the contributors, the humanists in the room maybe have heard of Michael Warner. I think he's been president of the Humanist Association. He writes, "For all the talk about reason and science, humanism is really about a passionate love affair. It is a love affair with life, not a mythical hereafter. Some people believe that science answers everything we need to know, but this viewpoint ignores the many tools that the humanities have given us. History, philosophy, literature, art, to name just a few. The deep identification of shared values of all people is what humanism offers beyond atheism. In our troubled anti-foundational times, it's time to take another look beyond society's failings, the universe's inherent meaninglessness, our own needs, and our avoidance of grand purposes. We should once again make commitment of the heart to pursue the best of who we are and society can be. Being a humanist takes passion, courage, and commitment. It requires a love of life." The last reading that I want to share with you is titled April Fools. Spirit of life and love, we gather on this day dedicated to fools and whimsy. We do not know who created this day, but surely it was a wise soul, hardly a fool. For there are indeed days that come to us all when we are one with the trickster, capital T, delighting in the world of surprise and laughter, and it lightens our spirits. Then there are days when it feels that the joke must surely be on us, when we wonder if there are other fools like us in the world, clowns whose smiles are not so different from their frowns. But the good news is that there are. We are all fools of a kind. And not just once a year, we have foolish hearts that dare to love, foolish minds that dare to explore, foolish spirits that dare to dream. Look around. We do not live by reason alone. We need something more. So let us pause for a moment to be grateful for the fools who live in each of us. Let us not be afraid to let them out, to laugh and fall and stand again, for we can never know what wisdom we might yet learn. The joke is on us if we think we can live by reason alone. The joke is on us if we fail to become whole person humanists. And for me, this does involve going beyond atheism. Life demands that I take a leap of faith and come out of the tomb of my dark soul. I don't need to believe in the literal resurrection of Jesus or of anyone to be able, ready, and willing to take that leap. I can and I do believe in the historical Jesus and think that the world would be a much better place if we all tried to live the way Jesus tried to live. There is a wonderful essay in the book I just showed you by a humanist named John Hooper, who has a very good definition of what a whole person, what it means to be a whole person humanist. Kendall Gibbons is a contributor to that book, and she writes this: humanism summons us to gratitude, not because some judging deity needs its ego stroked, but because that is how we become most fully human. To live well is to live with intelligence and integrity, with justice and compassion, with wholeness and beauty, and finally, inevitably, with thanks and praise for all that is our fragile, tragic, precious life. I personally need Easter to slap me in the face every year after the long dark winter and push me out of that tomb of the soul I sometimes bury myself in. Push me over just not very far to the patch of snowdrops and to the purpley things, cilias, and then to the crocuses and so on. It doesn't matter if I don't know their names. It's like the eternal truths that Spong was saying, talking about, and Theodore Parker. It doesn't matter if we know their names. And we know they're beautiful. We know they're there. We know they're going to reappear, at least so far in the world. I need Easter and spring so I can use the word lo. Oh, look at the crocuses. Lo, look at the daffodils. Woo. According to the dictionary, that word means to call attention to or to express wonder and surprise. What a lovely word. But whoever says it, lo. I need Easter because, as it says in the hymn number 61, change then mourning into praise, and for dirges anthems raise. How our spirits soar and sing, how our hearts leap with the spring. Alleluia. I had a really fantastic ending, but that's going to be the ending because I had a little April Fool's joke, I guess, played on me yesterday. My computer crashed. Oh, yeah. And I could, alleluia. I'm not sure how to take that. Does it mean because now I have to stop talking because I don't have the rest of my stuff, or because it's good to get away from the computer? So I tried to resurrect my words this morning, pun intended. And I'm sure that what I wrote was the most, and lost, was the most brilliant thing I have ever written. Yes. Oh, but I did find a handwritten note that I actually wrote. Jesus called his followers to resurrection, not of the physical body sometime after we die, but resurrection of hope, of possibility, every day of our lives. And for me, humanism does this, only humanism does it better, because humanism does it on a much broader scale, on a religion of humanity scale. Okay, so I resurrected some of my rulings. That's it. No fooling. That's it. I went to probably what's the most liberal seminary in the whole world, Star King School for the Ministry. But I went to other, there's a consortium. So I went, everybody okay back there? So I had classes from Jesuit priests, for example, and Dominican nuns. The best Bible study classes I had was from this one amazing Dominican nun. And what's that word? Exegesis, the interpretation of scripture. These are relevant stories. That's one huge reason to learn them. You know, the prodigal son and the story of the talents, the money. And is that the same story? No, but I suspect there are a lot of people in this room who grew up Christians. The stories are still extremely relevant, and there's a lot of current literature out there about that, the relevance of them. The closing words are from Unitarian Universalist minister Kenneth Collier, titled "What I Know." I do not know where we go when we die, and I do not know what the soul is, or what death is, or when, or why. What I know is that The song once sung cannot be unsung. And the life once lived cannot be unlived. And the love once loved cannot be unloved. No fooling. Go in peace, greet your neighbor, find your Easter eggs.